And then Christ's answer began with an if. 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 And then different translations. If you wish to go the whole way. If you wish to do more. Then. Give up all you have and follow me. And listen. And I can say this safely. I don't know of a single pope in the church's history until Pope John Paul II, who in his document, The Splendor of Truth, tells us those words of Christ to the rich young man are addressed to all of us. Does it mean that all of us must give up everything we own? Literally, physically? No. But must be completely, and the adverb is completely detached from everything in this world. Otherwise, and that's what the present Holy Father says, no other Catholics will survive. No others. You can no longer compromise with the world. Not today. That's why, as you also remember, in that encyclical, the Holy Father at length dwells on expecting martyrdom and living lives of martyrs, which means witnessing to Jesus Christ under duress. What a mild word. The world puts terrific pressure on those who want to serve Christ with their whole heart. And of course, one of the first things that the Protestants did was to get rid of religious orders. The Augustinian Monastery of Wittenberg, guess what it became? They became a condominium for married priests and nuns. Religious life, out with it. And finally, eschatology, which is one reason why I had copies made of this printout of the homily that I gave in Assumption Grotto on the Feast of All Souls. Is there a heaven? Well, we Catholics believe there was a heaven. But hear it. We Catholics believe this heaven is the beatific vision to which we have no natural right. And therefore, the beatific vision is a counterpart to grace. We need grace to reach heaven. And that heaven is the enjoyment of the vision of God experienced in the soul, and then after the last day, so we further believe, the bodies of those who are saved will rise, be reunited with their souls, and never again to be separated for all eternity. Hell. Who believes in hell? Well, I trust we all do. But how this doctrine of our faith is being challenged nowadays. And then, purgatory. And of course, both regarding heaven and purgatory. The founders of Protestantism had never really thought through what they finally did when they denied veneration of the saints. However, the most plausible explanation that I have found in the writings of John Calvin is that when a person dies and the soul leaves the body, that soul remains unconscious until the last day. Imagine praying to St. Francis or me to St. Ignatius. Poor Ignatius, he's unconscious. Oh, how they need what we have. And for purgatory, if you're predestined, either heaven or hell. There can be no midway. Imagine God not having fully made up his mind. Behind every single article of our Catholic faith that contrasts so pathetically with Protestantism is our faith in divine grace, in our conviction we have a free will. Once you hold that, everything else follows. Finally, fundamentalism. In Protestantism, as you know, there's been a resurgence of fundamentalism. So many Protestants have decided, my gosh, what my minister is teaching is no longer Christian doctrine. So I've got B, V, D, A, I. There are, especially these five premises in fundamentalism. Who knows what the B stands for?
Bible.
The Bible is the only infallible source of revealed truth. What does V stand for? Virginity of Mary. Mary is a virgin. What does D stand for? The divinity of Christ. Christ is truly God. What does A stand for? Christ's death on the cross is his atonement for sin. You know the hardest, I. By the way, would somebody look it up and tell us? Fundamentalism, I think, is in the index. Please?
Infallibility.
Please?
The infallibility of the Pope.
Oh.
Yeah.
Incarnation.
Please?
Incarnation.
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 That would be divinity of Christ. This is part of your quiz too, remember? I did tell you to read. toward the end of the chapter. The infallibility of the Pope is affirmed or denied? Please?
Denied.
Imminent second coming.
Say that again.
Imminent second coming.
Yes. That's the immediacy. The I stands for immediacy. The imminent coming of Christ. He's coming soon. The second coming, according to the fundamentalists, is near. And over the centuries, there, as you know, have been Protestant denominations built just on that. For example, the Adventists. Yeah, can I have some questions, please? Thank you. When a woman who is pregnant receives Holy Communion, does the child in her womb also receive the body, blood, soul, and divinity? Sure. And the child benefits from the Holy Communion. How's that? Not the same way the mother does, but child benefits. Is the Roman Catholic Church the only church that believes in the two presences of Christ in the Eucharist? If not, what other faiths believe in the two presences? There were especially two others that believe in the real presence, and they are the Orthodox and the High Church Anglicans. So the Orthodox and the High Church Anglicans. An associate pastor recently told my sister he believes the church should allow priests to marry since they were able to marry for the first 1,500 years of the church. Is this true? There's such a thing as a lie and, well, being a bigger lie and the biggest lie. This is near the top. Just sheer ignorance of the church's history. The followers of Father Feeney claim that baptism by desire is not acceptable. You must be baptized with water or else you perish forever. Well, there were Feeneyites who did hold this. Now, if you find anything printed in recent years, because they do publish, I'd be very happy to see where something precisely this is said. Feeneyites originally did hold this, but many changed their minds. I recently attended a funeral where people close to the deceased who were not in good standing with the church were receiving Holy Communion. What are your comments? I don't have any comments. I have some strong judgments. They should not receive Holy Communion. My friend's 2-year-old grandson was recently killed in a car accident. She babysat him several times a week and loved him so much. I saw her yesterday. She feels like she is a bad wife because she's been unable to be sexually responsive to her husband since the accident, which occurred on October the 31st. What words do you have to offer. Oh my goodness. Having lost the child, and I presume the child was baptized, she baptized him. Oh no, she babysat him several times. Trusted the child. If the child was baptized, it is certainly in heaven. Child was not baptized, you can trust the child is in heaven. So what you say, tell our Lord, dear Lord, it's painful, but I thank you. For the cross you've given me to bear, and I'm sure you have more children in store for me. The pastor at St. Pat's is defending the newly ordained priest's bulletin article taken from Thinking the Sacraments, or Rethinking the Sacraments, and defending the priest himself. The pastor was talking about consubstantiation, among other things. What can we do? Well, I've begun doing a little bit at Assumption Grotto. Last week we had a meeting of priests. I was asked, it was an hour's adoration, and then I was asked to speak to the priests. So I went to the pulpit and read a few sentences from this St. Patrick's bulletin. Told the priest, now let's do something. So, with God's grace, something will be done. You know what happened, don't you? In the parish bulletin, quoting from a book published recently, the author, and then quoted by the priest in his bulletin, says that for too long we have thought of the body of Christ as Christ's real physical body. That's all wrong, all wrong. We are the body of Christ. This is the church. We don't receive. Talk about blasphemy. We don't eat the toenails of Jesus. That's in the article. Pray for the author. Pray for the priest in the parish. And thanks for being here. Keep ourselves sane. Regarding your homily, I know a man, pardon me, a woman, who is living a life of selfless charity. She has been married for many years to a man who professes to be a Catholic and Christian, but who is very self-centered. Domineering and individualistic. He treats her with no regard and is certainly not an ideal role model to their children. She constantly forgives his negative behavior as best she can. She no longer loves him, but is cordial to him and does daily tasks that meet his needs regarding meals, laundry, and so forth. She really wants to do God's will. What does God expect from her regarding loving and accepting this man and his behavior? Well, there's such a thing as loving someone and suffering when you love. In other words, my heavens, this is what our life here on earth is, I don't say all about, but certainly includes loving unlovable people. And her patient love of her husband should be, and she should be told, it is no doubt God's way of her obtaining grace for him, so he will be saved. If pain and suffering are being endured and offered up, and one also has responsibilities with which the pain may interfere, such as mothering, teaching, and so forth, wouldn't one be prudent to take some medication so she can adequately carry out the duties of her vocation? Oh, by all means. By all means. My heavens. By all means. Not just some medication, but as much as she needs and even can afford. Yes. Yes. You said, I think, that you have written a refutation of Jung. Can we get a copy somewhere? What do you think of the field of psychology? What do you think of Christian therapists? I've written about Jung. I don't have a complete documentary on Jung, but I can provide it. What do you think of the field of psychology? Well, psychology literally means the science of the soul. What modern psychology has become almost exclusively is a science of the emotions and the feelings. We do speak of rational psychology, which is authentic psychology. So, it all depends on the principles or premises on which the psychologist's ideas are based. What do you think of Christian therapists? Well, I suppose the charismatics would consider themselves Christian therapists. The combination of Christian therapists, I must say, I don't like. And at this point, I could speak for hours. For example, people believing they've got special gifts of healing. Or maybe they do. But when we say Christian therapists, if you're talking about a sickness, which this person is somehow specially gifted by God to heal, it could be. But the last thing that such people would do is advertise their science or art. As you know, Father Jim Wright, St. Alexander the Great in Farmington Hills, is he okay? Well, I will find out something about Father Jim Wright, and if the one who presented this question would identify him or herself, then after I find out, I will tell you privately. A future son-in-law will be doing RCIA from that church. Our daughter and him will be married there. Well, I'll have to find out. And the person who submitted this question will please identify herself, not publicly, but let me know privately. If a person has a tumor and doesn't yet know if it's malignant or benign, are they candidates for receiving the sacrament of the sick? I see the first duty that person has to find out whether the tumor is malignant or benign. But yes, a person would be, I would say, a candidate for the sacrament of either extreme unction or anointed unction. The videotapes meet the abortion providers, one and two, show former abortion workers, doctors, and clinic workers who tell the truth about abortion. I'll bring some copies to our next class if anyone is interested. See Judy Magzura. Will Judy Magzura identify herself? There's Judy Magzura. So, okay, thank you. In your abridged pocket dictionary, you see the book has been revised. What does revised mean? Well, there's a special division of the Vatican. It has been in operation for generations, which, if I said revised, it might either have been a misprint or I was dozing. The Vulgate was, as you know, issued in the early 5th century. That means over 1,500 years. In the meantime, the Vulgate has gone through many printings, and every time a printing was made, you would expect mistakes. I've yet to publish a book. I've written, as you know, a number of books. I've yet to publish a single book that was without any errors. Not one. There are mistakes. So after 1,500 years, all kinds of, you get the idea, transcribers, and for centuries, well, till the late 15th century, they transcribed by hand. A monk transcribing the Vulgate. He'd been dozing, see? So he missed a word or two. And in time, so then that kind of, we wouldn't call it a revision, but an effort to bring the Vulgate back to what it was when originally done by St. Jerome. You said billions are made on abortions. Who makes money on abortions? Oh. Especially three classes of people. The medical profession. The legal profession. And politicians. And I don't back down to that word billions. Here are CHD, Campaign for Human Development pamphlets. Should we support it or not? Well, not having seen these pamphlets, I will read them first and then report after I've gone through them. If it comes to pass that we have no valid mass in the diocese, can people or some people get permission to have the Blessed Sacrament reserved in their homes? Well, don't be too worried about not yet having a valid mass. And the thing I've said more than once, a priest, though living in sin, and even has lost his faith, can still validly consecrate. What he wants to do with those who, say, want to receive communion or assisted mass, expect him to do, even though his own faith has been lost. My daughter is scheduled to be confirmed this coming spring. I have been homeschooling her. I have been asked to enroll her in confirmation classes in our parish. I'm afraid they are teaching heresy. Do I have an alternative? What is the earliest age that a child can be confirmed? The diocese, 8th grade. Well, my mother was confirmed at the age of 3 days, being Byzantine, she was baptized, confirmed, and made her first communion at the age of 3 days. Yes, there are alternatives. That's for homeschooling parents. This, as you know, is a problem for homeschooling parents, among other things, having their children confirmed. There are bishops, I know, who will confirm. You make trips to dioceses, that can be done. Moreover, priests can be given the faculties by a bishop to confirm children, as I have done more than once. Please comment on Kathy teaching on usury, number 2 in lesson today. Well, usury, as you know, was the taking of interest on, say, money that was lent to a person in need. For centuries, the Catholic Church forbade the taking of interest. And that was until money itself became a source of not just, shall I say, possession, but a means of revenue. In other words, the meaning of usury has changed. Same word. Usury now means taking exorbitant interest, which would be sinful. Basically, then, the Church's teaching on usury is that when people are in need, Christian, both charity and justice require you do not take advantage of the person's need and then even demand more of them because they are in need. But when money became itself a means, well, of not just support or of livelihood, but a source of income or revenue. In other words, with the rise of modern capitalism, usually as the Church understood it for the first 1,000 years, has changed. Please explain the Church's position on the authority of the state. Where does it come from? God and so forth? Also, kings rule by divine right against J.D. Rockefeller's idea. Well, the authority of the state, of course, comes from God. This is found in both St. Peter and St. Paul in the New Testament. However, civil society is established by God. When it comes to deciding or recognizing what authority the state has, what laws it may pass, what laws it may not enact, what sanctions the state may impose on people. Listen to this. There, and I don't know how many schools you'd have to go to before you'd hear this statement made. The state depends on the Catholic Church, on the Church's teaching, to decide what laws of the state may be passed, what laws of the state are unjust and inherent and may not, under penalty of sin, be obeyed. As I've said more than once before, making sure that Mother Teresa was in the audience in the church when I spoke. India with almost 1 billion people, just a small fraction of even Christians, not to say Catholics. And the state does not, to say the least, encourage evangelization. I know those sisters, and I can tell you, even the first 3 centuries, the apostles, the popes, the bishops, had obeyed the Roman Empire, the state laws, Christianity would never have been established. We become, and I have to use the word, we become so mesmerized, so hypnotized, so brainwashed in a country like ours, without realizing it, we are Catholics. Well, the state says this is a law, therefore I must obey. Dear God, no. That's why the church was founded by Christ, to tell us what belongs to Caesar and what belongs to God. Please explain the church's position on the authority of the state. I just did. Oh, is there more here? Oh, the king's rule by divine right. Verses. John E. Rockefeller's idea. Well, yes, kings do rule by divine right, but as I've said just a few minutes ago, their authority comes from God. But the way that authority is to be exercised depends, and hear it again, on the church which God become man founded. The Catholic Church decides. She is the one under God who has the right to determine which laws are just, which are to be obeyed, and hear it, and which laws of the state must be disobeyed. In view of the forced abortions and slave labor in China, could you comment on the cheap goods now flooding the United States from China? Should we buy Chinese goods? Well, I would encourage you not to. But it is not just China, by the way. Not just communist China. It is many other countries, as I've said before. In so many of the poor countries, they have impoverished, they have become impoverished by countries that have been merciless in having these people from children, young children, working slave labor to put fancy dresses on women and fancy shoes our feet. And this is one reason I think I should say this. The last general congregation, as we call it, of the Society of Jesus, made a resolution for all Jesuits throughout the world to promote justice founded on faith. As a member of the Society of Jesus, this I consider God's will for me. The widespread injustice in so many, as we call them, developed countries, now. We are not to use violence. It's not liberation theology, as some, as you know, understand it. But we should, all of us, I mean this sincerely, examine our consciences on how our own country has become the most prosperous nation in the world at the cost of so many people's even desperate needs. How could one explain to a man, to a non-Catholic, how the church determines who is a saint, how they came to the conclusion they have the right to determine this? Oh, that's easy. First of all, you've got to be a Catholic to believe what I'm going to say. We believe as Catholics the Church's teaching, I repeat, comes not only from sacred scripture, but also from sacred tradition. In the first century, and we believe that God's revealed truth continued till the end of the first century. In the first century, there were men, women, and children already honored as saints. And they were in the very early church. They were the martyrs. That's how our altars began, in the catacombs under the city of Rome, over the tombs of the martyrs. So the church began, and I consider this divinely revealed, my tradition. Saints, honored as such, venerated as such, already before the end of the first century. Secondly, how does the church now decide who should be a saint? Two ways. First, the person must have practiced heroic virtue. Ordinary virtue is not enough. And one of the marks of heroic virtue, the person must have experienced opposition. You'll never be canonized unless you have critics and opponents. If everybody is your friend, you may go to heaven, but you'll never be canonized. Opposition, persecution, rejection. And secondly, the person's virtue is examined over a period of years. And even though the virtue is declared to be heroic, and in Detroit, whose virtues have recently been declared heroic? Father? Okay. All he needs now is what? Some miracles, that's all. So first, heroic virtue. Secondly, miracles. Now, my clock here says 4:18. So, we're not told we have to leave, so I'll try to finish these in 10 or 15 minutes. You're welcome to stay. And by the way, thank you for writing big letters. Oh, thank you. It's an act of charity. Parsons turned to St. John's Gospel to show a pagan that they have to believe in the incarnation of Jesus Christ to be saved. Are they not just like the unbelieving Jews who reject the incarnation of God? They say they are saved by faith, but yet they refuse to believe what is explained about his perpetual incarnation to the hands of priests. According to them, they are not saved. What do you think? Well, we've all heard this expression. Ignorance is bliss. I really believe most of these people, God bless them, are in sheer ignorance. And remember, the most ignorant people can have doctorates. Well, this is where we have a responsibility to bring these things to their attention. When somebody asks me, what's the advantage of becoming a Catholic? I'm a believing Protestant now. Why should I become a Catholic? So I asked them, do you believe in Jesus Christ? Oh, yes, I believe in Jesus Christ. Do you believe that He is God become man? They say, yes. Oh, I'm so happy. Where is Jesus Christ now? Where is Jesus Christ? He is in heaven. Only in heaven? That's the difference. We Catholics believe that Jesus Christ, the living God, with a human nature, am I clear? With a human nature, is on earth. And that is the Holy Eucharist. Yesterday, Mother Angelica had a special half-hour program with a bishop to review Cardinal Ratzinger's recent letter